Thank you. First of all, I have to thank Maggie and other organizers who have organized this very important session about the concept of family, and Father Amos who have hosted us here. Thank you very much. And also thank Father Amos again for giving us a very beautiful perspective about family and the challenges. I very much agree with him that we are not the only ones facing challenges regarding family. And during the history, you have had that. The Quran, of course, mentions many challenges which faced family when the Prophet emerged, to the extent that some tribes used to bury their daughters. And this is maybe something which is not usually experienced very much. They didn't like daughter babies, and they used to bury them. And some people, as the Quran narrates to us, used to kill their children for the fear of poverty. And these were challenges that, thanks to God, we are not facing today in a wide scale, although it may happen here and there. Now, what I'm going to discuss in the few minutes that I have is to give a Muslim perspective about the challenges faced by family. I think the importance of these interfaith meetings, especially when it's serious and we talk about serious matters, is that we learn about each other's perspectives. Although we live in the same society, Islamic Center is just across the road and St. Augustine Parish is just here, we usually do not understand each other because we do not communicate our values to each other. And it would be very helpful if we have more of these sessions so that we know how we look at different things, how Muslims look at family and challenges faced by family in the modern age, and how Christians look at it. And I think there are many differences, certainly. However, by knowing the points of views of each other, we can somehow understand each other better and come to a closer cooperation and working together to solve the problems that we think is common amongst us. So what you hear from me on these written papers, which of course, seeing Father Amos not having a written paper, I was terrified, saying that, oh my God, I'm not so fluent in speaking, so I have to read it from the paper. What you are hearing from me is a Muslim perspective about the challenges faced by family. Well, about the importance of family, we know that, of course, it's an essential and fundamental cell of the society. And in fact, in a way, it is a tunnel through which we pass life to future generations. I think this is the most important aspect of family. The former generations pass life to the future generations. And it is not only life, it's many things. We pass on culture, we pass on values, we pass on psychology of the future generation to them. So I don't think anyone has any doubt about the importance of family. Now, families are formed not as mere means of satisfying animal instincts. Of course, all of us have sexual instincts, and there has been many different ways of expressing this instinct throughout the history. But I think everyone agreed right from the beginning that the best expression of this instinct is to form families, because it not only satisfies that urge in human being, it builds something which is much more important. So family is formed not as mere means of satisfying animal instincts, nor is a family a home merely an abode for a sleep, which sometimes it becomes. And Father, of course, mentioned that we are quite alien to each other, members of families, because we just go there to sleep, we do everything else outside family. It represents an educational environment both for spiritual growth and for intellectual development. It is a place for manifestation of many noble sentiments as well. There we learn our feelings, our sentiments, how we express them. And of course, these are endowed in man by God and has to be developed in a safe place. As such, the family should be built upon a holy bond, because life is holy, because human soul is holy, and a mutual vow of interdependence, of giving peace and tranquility, love and kindness between two hearts, and later on, of course, between many more hearts when the children come. Now, the Quran draws our attention to the love and mercy which is placed between male and female, and states that we will find signs of God in that if we rightly reflect. Now, the verse, I'm sure all of my Muslim friends know this verse by heart, in chapter 30, verse number 21, and among his signs is that he created for you mates from your own selves, that you may dwell in tranquility with them, and he ordained love and mercy between you. There are indeed signs in that for a people who reflect. We don't need to look at the universe, stars, to believe in God. Just we look in ourselves and our relationships with each other, the type of feelings that we have, the type of affection, love, which is placed in our hearts. There, this is what the Quran says. There is a sign for those who would like to reflect. Now, the choice of words in this verse is amazing. It doesn't talk, because love has many different words in Arabic, as in many other languages. Two main words for love, one is mawadda and the other is mahabba, hub and wud. Now, the verses ja'ala baynakum al-mawaddata wal-rahma. He has placed between you love with the word mawadda. Now, the commentators of the Quran say that the difference between mahabba as love and mawadda as love is that mahabba, which is love, is something felt in the heart. And mawadda is when that heartfelt love shows itself, expresses itself outside, reaches out to others. That is mawadda. I love my wife, but if I don't do anything for her, I love my children, but if I don't do anything for them, it's just a love, something in the heart. But when I express it, when I do things for them, when I do self-sacrifice, when I put my energy, my life for their well-being, then this is mawadda. This is shown outside. Now, that is why the institution of family and its prerequisite, marriage. Now, I want to emphasize here that from an Islamic point of view, marriage is the cornerstone upon which family is built. And modern definitions of family, I will discuss, of course, shortly, are not something that Muslim narrative can accept. So marriage, which is the prerequisite of formation of family, they have been given great importance in Islam. The Holy Quran commands us to marry off those who are single amongst us. Again, my Muslim friends know this verse in chapter 24. وَأَنْكِحُوا الْأَيَامَ مِنْكُمْ. Marry off those who are single amongst you. And the, of course, the exhortation comes because usually the young people do not have the means to marry, do not have the required amenities. And the Quran says you have to help them. You have to help them marry so that they do not have sex before marriage, which is something totally unacceptable from an Islamic point of view. If we believe in wisdom of God and purpose in his creation, we are bound to believe that the love and mercy between male and female is placed in their hearts to serve a purpose. And like all other gifts and merits granted to us by God, they can be misused and misplaced too. Quite obvious. According to the teachings of the Quran, the correct use of this gift is manifested in marriage and formation of family, as the misuse of it is expressed in indulgence, promiscuity, and sex out of wedlock. The way we should express our sexual instinct has always been a matter of dispute among the human race. We know right from the beginning, there has been always dispute in all cultures about how we have to express this instinct. The divine prophets, peace be upon them, have always held a moderate view on this matter. While on one hand, they advise their followers to get married and lead a normal sexual life and form families, on the other hand, they refrained them from indulging in immoral sexual practice, which would be destructive to their souls as well as to the society. Please remind me of the time. I'm just going. The Quran uses a great metaphor while describing the relation between wife and husband. You are garments to them, and they are garments to you. The verse, of course, reverberates for my Muslim friends. Hunna libasun lakum wa antum libasun lahum. This succinct Quranic simile encapsulates the primary aims of marriage: to provide warmth. What does a garment provide? Warmth, comfort, protection, and beauty. Of course, we are beautified when we are dressed. Children have a right to be conceived and reared in a stable and secure environment, and marriage is deemed to provide that environment par excellence. This being the case, sex outside marriage is discouraged, of course, by prophets of God, because it is considered as behavioral extreme that is not conducive to a wholesome society. The Holy Prophet paid considerable attention to this basic instinct of human being when proclaimed, "Whoever loves my nature will follow my code of conduct, and among my codes of conduct is marriage." This is because generally, biological, physical, psychological, and social well-being of humankind can only be achieved through marriage and formation of family. On a grand scale, the humanity is protected from extinction by this venerable institution. Well, this is, of course, a matter of fact, the reality. The leading aim of marriage in the grand plan of God is formation of family and procreation of healthy offspring. However, as we know, this institution has always been facing great challenges by those who prefer irresponsible sex. I want to emphasize this word, irresponsible sex, to responsibility of family. It is even more so in our modern age, as we are experiencing shift of values and norms, and individuals are exposed to different types of alienation and anomie. We live in an era in which the nature, function, and the structure of the family have been thrown under question. With the rise of single-parent families, same-sex couples, and live together without marriage, traditional definitions of family are being widely broken, and new definitions of family are emerging. Sex is no more restricted to wedlock, and boys and girls can have sex freely and at will from young age, starting in the school. This type of relationship has always been condemned by religions like Islam in order to protect the institution of family and the well-being of the individual soul. Alas, this very type of sexual relation is now protected and cherished by the law, by social values, by the media, and above all, by education. Marriage is not regarded anymore as a necessary prerequisite for family life. It is now an accepted fact that unmarried couples who live together can have children and form a family. After all, if you can have sex outside marriage, why not have family without marriage? Now, this becomes quite common sense. But this is not all. The definition of family is being broadened to include the cohabitation of partners of the same sex, something vehemently, explicitly, and unequivocally condemned by the Quran and Islamic narrations, to say the least. The relationship between man and woman is defined now by lust and not by love. Love in TV, radio, papers, and social media is now a cheap other word for love. Sex as a lustful object is what you can see and find everywhere. Just drive down any high streets and you see this, of course, expression of sex as lustful object. That is why there are increasing number of individuals who see the institution of family as redundant and do not value the importance of family ties. These are some of the challenges that the institution of family is facing in our time, and the way out of it is by no means easy. The insurmountable difficulty is that the problems I listed above are not acknowledged as problems, but as progress of human understanding, as new forms of human relation, and as advancement of civilization. And as long as we have this type of mentality, we cannot address these issues, which are problems according to Muslim understanding. However, although for those of us who acknowledge these problems and seek solutions for them, the following steps may help to improve the situation. The first step is to disobjectify and decommodify sex. As long as sex is presented in society as a commodity, as a pastime, as a lust, there is no remedy for the downfall of family. Some observers view the strict rules of modesty in Islam as extreme and backward, while if we go to the root of the matter, we would see that the ailment starts from slackening these standards. By restricting sex to marriage, the latter finds back its normal place, and the cornerstone of the venerable institution of family. But this is not possible unless we remove the deceptive idea of sex as a commodity and a pastime. You see, sex is now business. You want to buy a car, you have to be to see a naked lady beside it. You want to buy biscuits, and they advertise it by a naked lady beside it. Why? Which one am I buying, the biscuit or the naked lady? So the commodification, so to speak, of sex is one of the hindrances. This would be the shift in values, in media output, in education, and above all, in business. The second step is to believe in the idea of one for all and all for one. Family gives the strength. As the narration from the Prophet puts it, the hand of God is with the congregation. And what congregation nobler than the congregation of family, which is based on bounds of love and self-sacrifice? Unfortunately, the individualistic values of our modern age put the utmost importance on one's own interests, values, pleasures, and promotion.
If we ponder deeper on the verse about mawadda, we shall see how it rejects the individualistic self-interest of the spouses and ennobles the value of self-sacrifice. The third step is to appreciate and educate our children about the differences that God has wisely and beautifully placed between male and female. Neither of the two should try to imitate the role that the other should play. Women should be reminded of the value of motherhood over all other of their God-given merits, and men should be reminded of the responsibility of care and love that they should offer to their family. When it comes to the crucial issue of difference, the Quran exhorts us, all of us, as such, do not covet the grace which God has given some of you over others. To men belongs a share of what they have earned, and to women a share of what they have earned. Ask God for his grace. Indeed, God has knowledge over all things. Finally, the interaction of the members inside the family, especially that between wife and husband, should not be based on individualistic drives. Tolerance, forgiveness, magnanimity of character, selflessness, and devotion are but some of the qualities that would make the family ties enduring and sustainable. The Quran summarizes all these in one sentence: وَلَا تَنْسَوُ الْفَضْلَ بَيْنَكُمْ. Do not forget honorable conduct among you. Thank you very much.